Hello, everyone, and welcome to bonus episode 276 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. I'm not sure exactly when I'm going to release this episode, but it'll be sometime in the week of last week of October 2021. Slappy Jones will not be joining me for this because this is a recording of a Twitter Spaces I did about 2 months ago, end of August, with JW Weatherman to give my review of three different Bitcoin wallet setups for JW's website, bitcoinsafe.io, where they get a lot of different people and kind of walk through different Bitcoin wallet setups in order to rate their ease of use, their security, and everything kind of else for the, really for the average person. Like what is the noob that doesn't know any better? You go send them to buy this, you know, hardware or software, whatever it is, and or just download free and open source software. And the most likely thing they're going to do, like we all do when we're not technical experts on whatever we're doing, is just go through the standard setup. And what kind of security does that give you? What kind of privacy does that give you? There's a bunch of different things that we go through, categories, and we rate them. And the idea is you get a bunch of people doing that, and hopefully it'll filter up the best solutions up to the top. So it's a good place to go to send someone to get different ideas of different options that they have. So I reviewed three different setups: the Trezor Standard setup, the Casa HODL Gold 2 of 3 multisig, and the Yeti Bitcoin Wallet Level 3 multisig. So we kind of give other explanations about what's going on, so I don't have to go through all of that much stuff right now. So let me jump into this, and also remind you that October 31st is Halloween, so I'm sure some of you will go on some hay rides that are pulled by tractors, so that's pretty cool stuff. So, all right. Show notes page for this episode will be mcflugel.com/276, where we'll link to bitcoinspaces.io. So, all right, let's get us to the recording I did with JW.
Hey, how's it going? Rollo should be here any minute. Hey, just to give you guys a heads up so you know what's going on, we're going to do a kind of an interview with Rollo McFlugel. He's been around Bitcoin for a while, and he's going to rate some Bitcoin storage solutions that he's aware of. Since there's been some people that didn't like the clarity that the website brought and have, you know, really tried hard to make it seem like these reviews are faked. Not very many. Only two or three people have been guilty of that. Sorry about the clicking. We decided that from now on, we're going to do them all live, and we're going to record them, and we're going to link them from the site so that there's nobody can say, oh, you know, my friend works at Trezor and I really wish I hadn't rated it, or whatever nonsense might come up. Sorry about the loud noise. I was opening a soda. Should have muted. So Rollo should be showing up any minute. I don't know. I guess we can just hang out until then. So if anybody wants to chat, just raise your hand. And there he is, right on. All right. How's it going, man? You got to unmute yourself.
Good. There it is.
Right on. Yeah, so thanks for doing this. Jumping right into the fire of the negativity around all these products that don't turn out very well when you actually just look at them. But, definitely appreciate it. I think it's a worthwhile effort, so I appreciate you being willing to do it.
Yeah, no problem. I think it's important, and you got to slog through this stuff. I've been in you know, the libertarian Bitcoin spaces enough to know that you're going to piss people off with whatever you say, and you know, it's par for the course. You know, and as long as you try to do it honestly and with an open mind and hear people out and everything, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, totally. I think, I mean, this is particularly, I don't know what the libertarian space is like, but I would imagine if you started talking bad about like doTERRA or whatever it is that they're selling, it would be a lot worse than if you just like said, I don't like Hayek or something.
Yeah, libertarian space is weird because a lot of the people end up just being like, well, actually, I don't think Rothbard and Mises were any, so I'm going to go. And so they love to just dump on all the dead guys who have done all the building and no one's ever actually debunked, but just so they can be their little 2-bit armchair philosophers without understanding first principles. So
right on. All right, well, I appreciate your thick skin, however you got it. So all right, so for everybody that's listening, we're just going to go through the normal process of reviewing some stuff, and I think you said you wanted to rate Trezor, Casa, and Yeti. So maybe we'll go through Trezor first because that's probably the most simple one. And just to clarify, you know, this is being recorded. You know that I'm going to take your data. I'm going to average it with everybody else's. It's going to be published on BitcoinSafe.io. The way that it's displayed might change over time. We're trying to make it consumer friendly. And so we're trying to, you know, show the top for privacy, the top for ease of use, whatever. And you're good with all that.
Sure. Yep.
Okay. Right on.
I don't know if before we jump into this, if I want to, I don't know if establishing credibility is the right term for it, but, just to give a little slight bit of background about myself who aren't familiar, but, I've been in the Bitcoin space, I guess, for a while, bought Bitcoin back in 2014, didn't really know what I was doing with it, bought it as a hedge. I was in the libertarian spaces before that, you know, anti-government, everything. So I was around the run-up of 2017 that, you know, started to pay more attention to it and started talking to JW. He kind of actually was the one that came on my podcast and explained the block size debate to me and turned me with that. And then subsequently taking your course that turned into 10 hours of Bitcoin, or that seminar, is what really turned me into a maximalist. Yeah, that's what really turned me into a maximalist. I remember after taking that seminar, I texted Slappy, my co-host, and said, hey, you know, I don't remember the reasons why, but money can only be one thing and Bitcoin's it. And he's like, you're going to have to explain that to me. And then I went back through it and got him on board and the rest is history. I am not a software developer. I've done a little bit of coding in my past with things with, you know, school and work and everything. I'm probably most proficient in MATLAB, if anyone's familiar with that. I guess it's kind of similar to Python or JavaScript. And where I feel like I do have some credibility here is that my day job, I am a mechanical engineer by degree and reliability engineer by profession. So a lot of the concepts that are involved with, the trade-offs and understanding what's going on with Bitcoin and general reliability of what you're doing is really in my wheelhouse. So while I might not be the most technically proficient guy, you know, I can take a look at what you're trying to tell me what to do and understand how to weigh the pros and cons and say, hey, is this trade-off worth it? Is it not? You know, understanding, you know, layers of protection and threat models and everything else, root cause analysis, failure mode and effects analysis, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's awesome that you know, I can go into Bitcoin using stuff I learned from my day job.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, totally. That's a good thing to clarify. So, like, we're not claiming that everybody that is featured on the website or that's part of this rating system is like you know, super security expert. The whole point of doing this really was to show that if there are people that are, you know, they've been around Bitcoin, they've thought about these things, they're, you know, normal people, they've thought through pros and cons of a lot of this stuff. That's enough, because that's how best practices really emerge, right? The best practices in any industry are not because there's, you know, a bunch of eggheads that have just focused on some niche for a really long time. It's because over time it becomes very, very apparent that certain things are really stupid. Like, it's a really bad idea not to have your own keys. It's a really bad idea to use closed source software. Those sort of things is all you really need to know to make a huge contribution for people that are completely brand new. And, you know, once people get up to speed, they can do stuff that's, they can take the rails off, right? But a lot of people are just looking for, all right, if I've been around for a while, you know, would I ever cross these two wires? and that's all we're going for here. So, yeah, you're actually overqualified in some ways. But yeah, I mean, you've been a Bitcoiner, you've been around for a long time. I totally forgot that you took that course, man. It always hits me when somebody says that, because that was kind of the first thing that I did and put a ton of work into. And it's been so fruitful. It's been unbelievable. With the 50 or so people that went through that course, it's kept me going, actually, being reminded of people like you that are like, you're basically running a Bitcoin podcast for libertarians. I'm sure you've helped get quite a few people off of the Bcash crack over the years.
And I sent a lot of people to 10hoursofbitcoin.com. We mentioned it every episode, and that's what that seminar turned into. So it's
you still mention that on your pod? Right on, man.
Yeah.
Right on.
Hey, okay, if, cool. If Michael Saylor thought it was worth putting on his website, then, you know, I think I could mention on my podcast.
That's true. It's hard to argue with that kind of logic. All right, man. So let's jump into this. So Trezor standard setup. Actually, I'm going to DM you this spreadsheet so that you can see it as we do it.
I have. Did you change the spreadsheet since the last time you sent it?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I have it open.
Okay, cool. So we're filling out the raw tab. I have it filtered. I think it should show filtered for you too, actually. I have it filtered just for Trezor standard setup. So you can see how everybody else has rated this stuff too. Like, you can cheat and go, oh, I know that guy's smart. I wonder why he rated it that, and then change your rating, right? And also later on, if you ever want to change your ratings, if you're like, hey, I thought more about this and I really want to change that from a 3 to a 2 or something, that's fine too, because this is not like trying to play gotcha with anybody. And that also applies to the other, you know, couple losers that have tried to pretend that their reviews were faked. All right, so Trezor standard setup. If you go to Trezor.io, right? So another clarifying thing: we're not rating individual products. We're rating solutions, right? So there are smarter ways and dumber ways to use a Trezor. And if, there's actually a couple people that have rated Trezor in combination with, like cold card and, you know, using a multi-sig or whatever with whatever. But right now we're just rating. You bought a Trezor, the standard setup that you would follow if you started at Trezor.io. So the URL is specified. So that's what we're rating.
Sure. Right? And I actually, the Trevor, I have used the Trezor. I had the Trezor, what was the first one? I guess maybe not the first one. What was it called? But I used that and I used the standard setup that they gave me.
Right on. Okay. All right. So you're familiar.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. The other thing that is probably worth clarifying is that we're not like you're free to rate stuff that you haven't used before, right? Like if you've never used Coinbase and you want to rate storing your Bitcoin on Coinbase and you know that that's not a good idea because it's fully custodial, that's okay. You don't actually have to sign up for a Coinbase account. You can read the documentation and know how Coinbase works, or, you know, just peruse the website for 5 minutes and you can tell a noob, hey, don't store your Bitcoin there. All right, so let's go through this. The first category is how complete are the instructions? So the description here is, are the instructions complete enough for a non-technical person to complete the process without help? or to be able to hire help safely without the help knowing you're doing anything Bitcoin related, right? So it's pretty generous as far as the description goes, but basic idea is how easy is it for, and all of these things are assuming a typical user, right? A typical user following the instructions. So how complete are the instructions? How easy are they to follow the instructions, basically? Mm-hmm. So rating of 1 to 5, very high, high, marginal, low, very low.
I would rate this a 5. I remember doing it. It's pretty straightforward. It walks you straight through it, what you got to do. They got on-screen things.
Yep, awesome. You know what? I think I'm going to stop taking notes. That's cool. I don't have to do that anymore because we're recording it. All right. So setup time, how long, this is the description. Are the instructions complete enough for a non-technical person to complete the process without help or to be able to hire? No. What am I reading? Dang it. This copy and paste error. All right. So setup time is pretty straightforward. The basic idea is starting at the very beginning of the process, and you can include stuff like how long it takes to order the stuff, not like downtime, right? Like if it takes you 5 minutes to order the equipment, then you can include that. The idea is how much time does it actually take the person, even if there's gaps in the process, like waiting on things to be delivered or whatever, to go from, all right, I hit the website to I've got it set up. How many hours?
I'd say, I mean, in whole numbers, or it's less than an hour. Okay. It's pretty quick.
Privacy. So you can look at the comments that other people have had, but privacy is, if a normal person follows this guide, how private is the solution on a scale of 1 to 5? I'll give you my commentary. You're not using a full node. You're connecting to the Trezor servers. It's not over Tor. So you're sharing. You're sharing your Bitcoin balance and your IP address and all your transactions with some dudes in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, I would give it a 1, lowest score. It's your subject, your IP address is subject to what's ever going on, and or not your IP address maybe, but your all your addresses are going hitting their node. So
the only pushback that I'm just looking through what other people have said, I think the only pushback is it can be worse. And that would be if you were using a random Electrum server. So I know some people, I think maybe even I changed my rating. What did I rate this thing at? No, I rated it terrible too. All right. But I did consider changing my rating because Coldcard is arguably worse. Like you're sharing all this with random dudes in Czechoslovakia, but Trezor actually has a pretty good reputation. They're not actually random dudes, but if you use a cold card and you use Electrum, you follow those instructions, you are actually trusting them with random dudes that you wish they were those guys in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, I guess maybe the pushback I would have on that is to say that, well, Trezor is a neck that someone can grab. And as we've seen with other, hardware wallet companies and stuff that, they're a target for hacking or the government saying, hey, give us your data and... You're hoping that they care more about their livelihoods and their families than you, which they're not, and you can't expect them to. So it's a big. It may not be an explicit like you may not be like dumping data, your private data to them, and they're going to do something bad with it. But there's just a huge attack surface there that could be exploited without that much of a problem for the attacker.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, arguably, you are better off with some random dude knowing your IP address and your balance and all that, rather than a company that's more likely to get a letter from the NSA. And if you've read about the lava bit, you have a pretty good idea of how that works. So, yeah, good point. All right. All right, theft prevention. How protected is the user from attackers attempting to steal their Bitcoin? A low privacy rating could also harm this rating, as physical attacks are more likely with poor privacy. So don't include accidental loss.
Right.
Just looking through other people's comments. I guess the basic idea here is you've got one piece of paper with your seed written on it, you've got the Trezor, so you don't have much redundancy there. I think, no, that's more for loss prevention. Sorry, it's been a while since I've done this. So I'm trying to think.
Well, even for theft prevention, if you got someone breaking, are we including like someone breaking into your house?
Yeah,
because I think hardware wallets tend to be very overrated for physical security, because how many people store their hardware wallet in the same drawer with their seed phrase?
Yeah.
Like if you're talking about physical security, your seed phrase is the soft target, and anyone who has any idea what they're looking for or targeting, you know, if they find a hardware wallet, their search is not over. They're going to go look for your seed phrase. So
that's true. It does not say in the instructions, at least last time I looked, that you should store your seed words offsite or don't store it with your hardware wallet or anything like that.
Right.
So I think that's fair. The other thing is you probably have malware on your laptop,
right?
Because they don't tell you to clear that off. So, and that's actually, maybe that's why I kept the privacy very low, because that's the other problem from a privacy standpoint, is that whoever actually is running your laptop has even more than your IP address. They have your whatever you have on your laptop. They have, probably have pictures of your kids with geolocation, along with your Bitcoin balance. So that's great. All right. So theft prevention on a scale of 1 to 5.
I'll give it a 2, just because you do have a chance to keep your keys offline. That you're not totally, I agree that when you install it on a malware infected laptop, there's still, I think you're probably still relatively safe, but it's still not good. But I think a phone wallet or something on your malware infected phone with your seed phrase is worse, and I think we should have a place for that.
Yep. Right on. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So theft prevention, I'm going to go a little faster now, I think.
Sure.
Okay. Cost, I'm not going to ask you that. It's about $70. Everybody else has already provided that. Loss prevention. So how protected is the user from accidental loss of his Bitcoin? Don't include loss from theft. So you've got one piece of paper with your seed words written down. You've got your Trezor. Scale 1 to 5, where you'd hit those guys?
I'll give it a 2.
All right. Inheritance safety. So how protected are the Bitcoin if the user dies? Will his heirs end up with his Bitcoin, or will they be lost or stolen because there's inadequate instruction or the seeds are unlikely to be discovered? Also, I think what goes in with that is, if it's really hard to set it up, then they're going to reach out for help. How likely is it that somebody screws them when they do that? So basically, imagine this normal dude dies and then follows these setup instructions. On a scale of 1 to 5, how likely is it that his heirs end up with his Bitcoin?
I'd say 3.
You still
there? Yeah. Okay. I was thinking. I'll give it a 3. Cool. Just because I think it's the other practices are so bad that I think you're going to easily find it if someone goes through your house and your stuff. And I'm pretty sure that the little paper that they give you with the Trezor says something on it, that it's Trezor.
Yep.
So.
Yep, it does. Yeah. Yep, that's true. Okay, right on. How safe is the setup process itself? Does it require the user enter seeds, complete a test transaction, store seeds in many locations before making big deposits? So this got added partly because the reason that something like Yeti takes so long is it's very time consuming to make a tiny deposit, erase your wallet, reestablish it, all that sort of stuff. From what I remember when I set up a Trezor, it doesn't have you do any of that. You just set it up, you write down your seed words, and you're good to go. I think you do have to re-enter your seed words, though, if I remember it.
Yeah.
So there is that, but I think that's the only safety check. And then the other thing is, again, you've got malware on your laptop, so that's a good opportunity for malware to ask you to enter your seed words. And if you're a brand new user and you're setting it up, that's you're not as likely, I think, to... I think users are more likely to make a mistake when they're first setting up than they would be, 6 months later. So that's why that got broken out. But yeah, I don't know if you can see the description there, but that's basically the question. How safe is the setup process? How likely is it that this user is going to get screwed if they follow these instructions during the setup process?
I'll give this a 2. I think it's, they kind of get you going maybe a little bit too fast, especially if you're, a total noob, but, they do make you put in the, I do remember that you do make, have you do the seed, put the seed phrase in. And, I remember kind of understanding the importance of that as I was going through it.
Right on. Cool. That's it. That's it for Trezor. So, yeah, for everybody listening, I don't think anybody has ever said anything controversial on any of these reviews. So it's clearly people don't want you to know that that this isn't controversial, because it's really not. Okay, so let's do the one that gets me in trouble with billionaire VCs on Twitter and these particular brand of bad guys, in my opinion, anyway. So let's do Casa Gold 2 of 3. So this is if you go out to keys.casa, the standard sort of most people setup process is Casa Gold 2 of 3. This is that typical, right? So it is possible to do this in a smarter or a better way, but this is like the default, right? If you follow these instructions, not if you are smart enough to know these instructions are really bad and do something different. And I know you probably haven't been crazy enough to pay for it, but you still have a high level enough understanding to read it. So you're going to have to make some guesses, and feel free to throw in any qualifications or comments or notes so that people have a picture of it. But how complete are the instructions? Are the instructions complete enough for a non-technical person to complete the process?
I'm actually going through the...
So Casa is interesting because almost everybody hasn't done it because you have to pay money to actually do it, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, if you go out there, I would say that it's it's almost not fair not to give it a very high, because the whole point of this is that if you run into any problems, they'll walk you through it, right?
Right.
So even if you can't get to all their documentation, right? It's a little bit weird because with everything else, you can see all the documentation, you can see all the software. With this, you have to kind of guess based on the website what they're doing and what the user experience is like.
Okay, for most people. I found a getting started. This article details to set up Casa's app 2 of 3 multi-sig key set.
Cool. Good deal. Okay, so how complete do you think the instructions are? Again, if you had any questions, the whole point is you're paying, so you get a support. You can open a support request and they'll walk you through it. And it's assumed, I think, that that if you're doing this, you think the Casa setup help is safe. So probably, I'd probably say that it's still pretty high.
Yeah, it looks like a 5. It looks pretty good. It looks pretty complete here.
Cool.
I got pictures and videos.
Right. Setup time. Just guess how long you think it would be. Because it's going to be averaged with other people too. Actually, you know what? I thought I had somebody that actually went through the setup process that rated it, but I think that person decided they didn't want it published. So setup time, you want to guess, or actually I could just, we can, yeah. I don't know if you want to guess or what your thoughts are there.
It looks like, yeah, maybe like 2 hours. You got to download an app and then set up a hardware wallet and use remote. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if the Casa guys ever want to push back on anything that we've rated, what we're guessing, and say, hey, really, it's an hour or it's 45 minutes, I'm sure that you'd be open to looking at that and updating your rating. I know I would.
So. Sure.
All right, privacy. Scale 1 to 5 on privacy. Very high, very low.
1.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet. You want to make some comments on that since I'm not writing them down?
Yeah, you're not running your own full node on this. You are, they're keeping one of the keys for you. So they, have full view of everything that's going on. You're signing up for a program with them where you're paying them money, so they know who you are. It makes what we were talking about between, you know, Trezor running a node on your behalf versus using a random Electrum server. This is just like, you just lay everything out for an attacker if they get access to your stuff, exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
It's really not good.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me, like, people will say, well, you sign up for Casa and you can use a fake name, but their instructions don't say, hey, this is the point where you should use a fake name, right? So you can't, like, we're rating the default setup experience and what almost everybody's going to do. We're not saying that if you were a secret squirrel, you couldn't figure out a way to do this slightly more safe. And in the default that we're rating, they mail out your stuff to you. They tell you to install the mobile wallet that's closed source. And they ask to hold that third key, right? So that's kind of the whole point. So yeah, that's a good point. All right, theft prevention, scale of 1 to 5. How protected is the user from attackers attempting to steal their Bitcoin? A low privacy rating would also harm this, as physical attacks are more likely. But try to not include accidental loss when you're thinking about this. Just somebody trying, a bad guy trying to steal your stuff.
I'll give it a 2. It's claimed to be multi-sig, but when you're using their closed source app to generate one of your keys and they hold one of the other keys and it's a 2 of 3, that means that, you know, there's a good chance that they are holding both of those keys, which makes it not a 2 of 3 for you, you know. Right. I'll give it a 2 as opposed to a 1 because they're, you know, we can't review their closed source code. I would assume that they don't have mal, you know, aren't, you know, have software in there that makes it so that they can access your key, because it would be very bad for their business if that got attacked. But, you know, there's no code review from the open source that you would get from the open source software. So, you know, you're relying on just those guys to, you know, have good, reliable code. And, you know, with Bitcoin and things like that, that's really, really a bad practice.
Yep, totally. Yeah, I personally would, I've said this a few times and it always triggers people, I would rather have my coins on Coinbase than in closed source software. Because if you have a spending threshold of my keys in closed source software, you have total plausible deniability just to run off with my stuff.
Right. Because
at least if, yeah, makes sense. Okay, so loss prevention, scale of 1 to 5. It's a 2 of 3. How protected is the user from accidental loss? Don't include loss from theft. And it's seedless, by the way. Like the hardware wallet they send you, you don't write down. They don't want you to write down your seed words anywhere. I think they also do back up the mobile phone to the cloud. So for whatever that's worth.
I'll give it a 3.
Right on. Okay. Inheritance safety. How protected is the Bitcoin if the user dies? Will his heirs end up with his Bitcoin, or will they be lost or stolen because there's an adequate instruction or the seeds are unlikely to be discovered?
I'll give it a 3. Because they're probably going to have, you know, paperwork, documentation, something, a trail. You know, if you know, your grandfather has a Vanguard account or something, then he died, you know, you got to go through that process. Right. That's kind of the normal thing. So I would assume it's kind of similar to that. How they verify your death or something.
Right.
I don't want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to know more about, like, if you disappeared, what are they expecting your heirs to find in order to reach out? Because, like, your Fidelity account, you're getting a monthly statement, right? So if you disappear, something's coming in at least via email, which the heirs will get access to if they come with a death certificate to Google. So I wonder what you're counting on your heirs finding, but they haven't open sourced this stuff, so I don't really know. I think that sounds reasonable to me anyway. Okay, safe setup. How safe is the setup process? my notes say there's a malware infested laptop involved. So they don't, even when you're going through all this, they don't help you clear malware off your laptop before you start to set up the hardware wallet on it.
Yeah, malware infested phone too, all nine yards.
Yeah.
But since it is multi-sig technically, it does, you know, add some layers. I'll also throw them a bone. They says it's recommended that you test your setup using testnet Bitcoin before onboarding real funds. If you don't use real funds, start with small amounts. So I'll give it a three.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll give it a
three. That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I'll give it a three.
That's better than, I mean, just mentioning that, I got to agree that that's pretty significant because I don't think any of the hardware wallets tell you to do that.
No, I'm not really sure that I've seen it. They give you a link for getting testnet Bitcoins, it looks like. I mean, I think anything that kind of like helps the user pump the brakes a little bit and notch, because that's what everyone wants to do. Everyone just wants to get something, rip the box open, you know, not follow the instructions and just go. So,
Totally. Okay. So let's say that you want to, we added this because Yeti's actually super slow to spend from, and we wanted to highlight how slow it was in comparison to other things. How long does it take from the moment a user decides to spend to send a transaction? If seeds need to be recovered, include that time. So you're somewhere, you decide, I want to spend $50 to buy a phone card or something. How long do you think it would take in order to spend from this? And I think I need to go back and grab that number from Trezor
too. Oh, yeah, we didn't do that. Say an hour. They don't tell you to put your hardware wallet at a different geographical location or anything. I don't think so. So it's, no, you're assuming that it's, you know, that you're keeping everything kind of handy.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I would be surprised if it took that long because you've got your phone app and you've got a hardware wallet. The hardware wallet's probably going to, you know, even if you had to go get it out of your safe, I don't even know if they tell you to do that. They probably just have you throw it in the drawer, but or who knows, but let's assume that you got to get it out of a safe. Then you got to plug it in and then you got to hit a button on your phone. Or scan something on your phone. I can't see that taking a whole hour.
I mean, at worst, you got to drive somewhere where you're not home, probably within an hour.
That's true. I mean, maybe they tell you to keep your, that would be great to know. I mean, that would be super helpful, actually, from a security standpoint, too. If they said, hey, you know, your house could burn down, make sure that you don't leave both of your, or your house could be broken into. Don't, you know, if we're talking significant money here, don't have your phone and your hardware wallet in the same house. But I don't know whether they do that or not. I'm guessing no.
No, it says click on the connect device button in the email, connect your hardware device and export the public key and you're finished. Oh man, they're sending you emails and stuff. Oh man, to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, you know, they always say, oh, well, you don't have to use a real email. But the question is, do they tell you sign up for a fake email?
Well, I wasn't even, I was
part of the process.
I was thinking of,
I'm sure they don't.
I was thinking of phishing attacks.
Mm-hmm. Totally. If you know, if they wanted to minimize that, and this is how they'll respond to this criticism, right? They'll say, well, it's possible to create a fake email address and then only use that email address for this one thing. Then it's less likely that you're going to fall for a phishing attack. But I'd also be willing to bet that during the setup process, they just say, what's your email? They don't say, what's your fake email that you just set up that you're only going to use for this?
Or even so, even if they do say, what's your fake email, they, you know, have a database with your email on it and that can be attacked and who knows if they're going to disclose it and, you know, who knows if they know that it's been attacked. There's a lot of threats there.
Yep. Yeah, it's still not great, but yeah, good point. All right, so that's done for Casa. So back to Trezor. How long do you think it'll take to spend from your Trezor once you're set up?
Minutes.
Give me a number.
5 minutes.
5 minutes, all right. Okay, cool. All right, we're 2/3 of the way done, unless you end up thinking of something else you want to throw on here. But
nope.
Let's do Yeti now. And you wanted, you did three?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yep, I'm doing the same thing. Because I actually had mine, I actually did most of this.
Oh, yeah, right on.
Yeah, I never, never actually sent it in.
Cool. That was probably wise at the time. It's calmed down a little bit since the initial release. All right. So complete instructions. How complete are the instructions? Are the instructions complete enough for a non-technical person to complete the process without help or be able to hire help safely, in parentheses, without the help knowing you're doing anything Bitcoin related?
Yeah, it's a five. The walkthrough that as you go through it, it's steps out everything, and there's a video that you can follow along if you want to.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, obviously I'm glad to hear that. I won't pretend I'm totally impartial here. Let's see. Setup time. How many minutes, hours? Level four. Sorry, got a weird autocomplete.
I have 72 hours there. I guess like 3 days, took about 3 days. Most of that's just the node syncing. But I will say this is the worst part about Yeti 3 is the tediousness of writing down all of the all your private keys and everything.
Yep.
It's not difficult to do. It's just tedious.
Yeah. Actually, what sucks is I had a description here of exactly what time to include. And like idle time isn't included.
Okay.
And I'll make sure of that. So it's actually like active user time. But we do have some instructions in there that are pretty time consuming. For example, we tell you that you need to make sure that all of your backups are offsite and you've got 7 locations. So I would include drive time. I'd include the time that it takes to go to Walmart and buy the CDs. I'd include all of that tedious crap, but don't include the time that it's just sitting there, you know, syncing with the network.
I'll give it 12 hours then. No, hold on. I think it's 16. I'd say, just to break it down a little bit for what's going through my head, I think it's probably, if I remember, maybe about 3 or 4 hours of actual, like, on the computer, writing stuff down, setup time. And then most of the rest of it is just driving around. If you got to send presumably you might keep one of the seeds at your house. So conservatively driving to and from places for another 6 keys, depending on how far they're going out, could eat up some time. So assume like an hour each direction or something.
Yeah, that totally seems reasonable. Okay, privacy. If a normal person follows this guide, how private is the solution?
I'd give it a 5. It's you're running over a full node. You're not giving up your, you know, any sort of XPub or anything. You are running over Tor. I think all the privacy best practices are stepped out for you and default setup. You know, you don't have to like check a box to outside of this to run Tor. It's automatically in the code. So.
Yep. Right on. Okay. Cool.
I guess the one thing I'll say is that since it is the way that the transaction is set up, the 3 of 7 multisig. I don't know how many multisig arrangements are like that. So it on the blockchain, someone might be able to tell like, oh, this guy looks like this guy might be using Yeti Cold.
Yeah, totally. No, I think that is a really good pushback. I think I was just looking and Sankit brought that up.
Yeah, so I actually had that as a 4 from before. So I'll drop that down, the privacy to a 4.
Right on. One of the things, I mean, this is obviously something that we've been thinking about too. One of the ideas is that a future version of Yeti might do something like Shamir secret sharing. So that you really only have one seed, but it's broken up into 7 pieces. It's just not standardized yet, so we couldn't do that. The other possibility is that maybe Taproot helps with this. Depending on how we set it up, I think we could completely eliminate that problem if you spend with the default set of keys, but we haven't figured that out yet. And then the other thing we're thinking about is including in the instructions that every deposit and every spend should go through Join Market. Nobody's really finished testing that yet, so on our roadmap. But yeah, good points. Okay, cost.
Theft prevention is next.
World? I think I have an error here on Keyleys. All right. Did I fill out theft prevention for you? I think I did. Yes, I went to change this one and I filled out the next one. So just to be clear, high on privacy, not very high. And now we're on to theft prevention. Okay, cool. All right, theft prevention. How protected is the user from attackers attempting to steal their Bitcoin? Low privacy rating hardens this. Do not include accidental loss.
Yeah, I'll give it a five. It's you're explicitly instructed to, wipe your computers. It's set up to use Tor, and then I think most importantly, it is a very good multi-sig arrangement. And they, explicitly say, "Hey, go send the keys and to having be in seven different physical locations." So even if an attacker does know who you are and you've got Bitcoin, that having to get three different keys just makes the attack so much harder.
Yep, right on.
And
Okay.
also, you once you're done setting up your the Yeti Cold, you wipe the computer with the private keys on it. So that's also a very important thing, because if you don't do that, you took your three of seven multi-sig and made it into a one of one, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, right on. Okay, loss prevention, 1 to 5.
I've got that as a five too.
Okay, very high.
Yeah, because even if you lose a key, it turns into a three of six.
Inheritance safety. How protected are the Bitcoin if the user dies? Will his heirs end up with his Bitcoin, or will they be lost or stolen because there's inadequate instruction, or the seeds are unlikely to be found?
I give this a five, actually. I wanted to rate it lower, but I know on the instructions it says stuff like, give a copy to your lawyer or someone. And when you print out the papers to write down your private keys on it, it gives instructions for recovery. And actually, let me drop it down to a four. Because I don't think you say anything about like, hey, let someone else know where all your keys are. So they're going to have to.
Yeah, we thought about doing that, but that screws up the privacy so
Yeah.
bad. It is a tough call, but we our thinking is if you have seven different spots and two of them are safety deposit boxes, those are a given, right? Like they're definitely going to be found. And then one of them is a lawyer and one of them is probably an accountant. So at that point, even if you don't have one in your home safe, you already can lose one as the heir and still probably end up okay. But it is a tough call. I
Yeah,
mean,
I
it's
mean,
not.
and two, if you're giving it to friends and family too, to secure, if you die, they're probably going to know it, and they're probably all going to, be at the funeral
Right.
home and all holding this song. Like, I don't know what this is, but he gave it to, and then everyone's like, or they just hand that over to the executor of your will or
Exactly.
whatever. But I'll still give it a four just because there's that.
Yeah, it could be better,
Yeah.
probably. Yeah, that makes sense. I think we also say to label your envelope something like last will and testament, or something nondescript. But yeah, definitely still not perfect. Okay, inherent safety score. What else do I need? Oh, I need safe setup. So, how safe is the setup process itself? Does it require the user enter seeds, complete a test transaction, store seeds in many locations before making big deposits?
Yeah,
Scale of 1 to 5.
I'll give it a five. You do say to run a test transaction to make sure you're doing it, which I think anyone who's, or at least like for me, it was the first time I was ever setting up a multi-sig, and it's a little bit terrifying doing partially signed Bitcoin transactions with a bunch of different keys that you've written down, and you know, something a little bit different. But yeah, I think it's instructions are good to make sure that you're making sure you didn't set something up that isn't going to work.
Yeah, totally. Right on. Okay, cool. Spend speed. So you're sitting at home, you decide you want to send your grandma $50. How long before you're finished? And this also, if the seeds need to be recovered, so this would include drive time.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't include, well, this is interesting, actually. I'm trying to look at what we did with other people. Longest time is waiting to resync the blockchain. Yeah. All right. So we did include that.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Because you're supposed to wipe.
I wonder why.
You're supposed to wipe both computers. So I'll give it every bit of 4 days.
Yeah. That's fair. I think, what is this? 300 minutes. This is 6 hours. Yeah. I could see it. I think I'll just do it here. So 48 hours times 60. Trying to think of why, like, I don't even know why I rated it so fast, because I only have 300 minutes. Longest time is waiting to resync the blockchain. Oh, if you keep a trustworthy copy of, yeah, still, that's still gonna take, yeah, that's kind of, that's not fair, because we don't tell you to keep a trustworthy copy of your Bitcoin fold.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna change my rating too. Might as well make it more honest. I'd say probably 2 days start to finish, but yeah, it doesn't matter. It's crazy long. I wonder why.
It's funny because even if we say 4 days, that's on par with an ACH transfer.
yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
And the other thing is
it's not that fast to sync the network. It's definitely, it's minimum of 24 hours, right? Like I have a node that I started syncing yesterday on similar hardware to what we recommend, and it's been 24 hours and it's 92%.
Oh, wow. So yeah, I remember I had a laptop with put an SSD in it. I think it was 3 days it took.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, so I'll change mine to 3 days times 24 hours times 60 minutes. How is yours so short? 48 hours. Oh yeah. If I just do 3 times 24 times 60, why is this? I'm doing some stupid math here for sure. Oh, because you didn't say 48 hours. You said all of 48 hours, and now you're saying, so how many days?
I'm gonna push it back. I said 4 days, but I'll say 3 days, 72 hours, because I realize you could drive while you're syncing your node.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. All right. Yep.
So it's basically,
it doesn't matter. It's yeah. So freaking long. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But I'll,
nobody's gonna confuse the pros and cons of this in Blue Wallet. That's for sure.
Yeah. But I'll give it the score, I guess, would be a 2. Because it's not like I want to reserve the 1 for if there's like a time lock or something on your Bitcoin or whatever.
Which one are we looking at for? Because
there is no speed score. Never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind.
No. Yeah. It's just a total number.
Gotcha.
Yep. Awesome. All right. That's it, man. Thanks for doing that. I can't imagine how anybody could be a prick about it, but hopefully they won't. And, I think, you know, I think the fact that this is recorded is something I should have obviously in hindsight done from the beginning, because nobody expects you to take down podcasts once they're published.
Right.
And it's like people understand that. So hopefully if moving forward, if somebody tries to pull a fast one, this whole, we've got it recorded and linked. Not that I think that you're going to do that, obviously.
Right.
But I think this is the way to go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was great. I appreciate it. So I don't know. Let's hang out for a bit if you feel like it. There's a couple of people that have requested to speak that have come in and out.
Sure.
And might as well. We'll throw some Q&A on there for you. We'll, anybody that listens to this off the website will get a bonus Rollo episode. hey, Rachel.
Hey, I don't remember requesting to speak until a second ago, but hello.
Hey, no problem. If anybody else wants to, if anybody else has any questions or comments or wants to chat about it, go for it.
I do have a question though. How do you feel about Ledger in general?
Rollo, you should handle this. I'm just going to play podcast and let you. This is all about your review anyway. It won't make sense if I answer a bunch of these questions.
Yeah, I didn't listen to the whole thing. I didn't hear you bring it up. So just to be fair.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of Ledger. I'm just not a fan of hardware wallets in general. When you have a hardware wallet too that has functionality for a lot of different altcoins too, like Ledger and Trezor do, you lose valuable engineering resources to trying to support all that stuff. And when you really want to be focusing on Bitcoin and securing that, you know, there's limited resources available. And so they direct some to supporting the other altcoins. And also if obviously I am against holding altcoins and everything. But if you're holding altcoins on a hardware wallet like that, the chances are that they're, you know, really doing as much work as they would with Bitcoin or something. It's probably a lot more of copy and pasting and an afterthought. And then also as far as the security and your privacy with Ledger goes, I mean, they had that massive data breach that people were getting phishing attacks and, you know, interesting letters and everything else. Between, you know, just my general dislike for hardware wallets, and then all those problems I just mentioned, I don't recommend it.
Okay, no problem.
Hey, anybody else want to throw up some questions or comments? Feel free to request to speak. I don't know how much time, Rollo, you have, but let's
see. I got a bit.
Got a request. Okay, right on.
Hey, JW, it's me again.
Hey, man.
I'm always popping in these little spaces that you're holding and slowly learning more about Yeti and compounding knowledge, so I really appreciate it. My question is, maybe you guys can comment on the real trade-offs between Yeti Level 2 and Level 3. I haven't the air gapping thing, maybe in my mind that's like a bigger deal than it really is, but when I just ran over them, I was like, I could do Level 2, but Level 3 is another level. Can you talk about any security trade-offs there and then actually the effort involved?
Level 2 is it's just a single laptop, 3 of 7 multi-sig?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess when you're the benefit of having that second laptop is that you create a watch-only wallet that never sees your private keys. And so when you're sending Bitcoin to your cold storage, you don't have to have that laptop online anymore. So your key generation, you know, the laptop as you're installing the software and stuff, it'll kill the Wi-Fi connection and you're instructed not to have it connected to, you know, an Ethernet cable. So it just eliminates that little threat that you're going to, you know, inadvertently or do something stupid and get some malware on your computer that would cause someone to gain access to your private keys while you're spending from it. And so with Level 3, when you do actually have to spend from it and, you know, you restore those keys to that offline laptop, but once again, it's staying offline. And then you do a partially signed Bitcoin transaction. So you're sending the transaction data, I guess you're creating it from the watch-only wallet and then send it on a USB stick to your offline computer where it gathers the private keys and signs it, and then you send it back to the watch-only wallet to broadcast the transaction. I guess the biggest threat there would be if you get some malware on your USB stick that somehow has software on it that turns on your Wi-Fi. So maybe something in the future would be better with having a QR codes or something if you've got cameras on the laptops. But again, you know, to be fair, the instructions on Yeti Cold is to wipe your watch only laptop too, and not to be using that as a daily driver computer where you're getting it, you know, infected with malware and stuff. So, I guess the biggest difference is you're having a laptop that is the private keys or seeing an online laptop with level two. But as long as your laptop's clean while you're doing the process and then you wipe it, you know, you still do have a 3 of 7 multi-sig.
Yeah, because if I'm setting up a computer, you know, from scratch, never downloading anything on it besides the Linux install, then that means the only risk that exists is connecting to the Wi-Fi or the internet, right? Mm-hmm. And then I guess apparently there's threats just by even making a connection.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different, you're trusting the Linux platform and this Yeti cold software, but there's not anything nasty in it too. Maybe that's doesn't matter, for this case, trusting the Yeti software. Cause if there's something bad in it, then yeah, it's going to be bad regardless. Yeah, I think the big thing though, is that, you're minimizing, or you're just not having your private keys online at all using the level three. So maybe you want to have that that watch only wallet going for, you know, cranking along a little bit, because you don't know when you're going to be sending Bitcoin to it. You know, if you're regularly buying Bitcoin and regularly sending the cold storage, then it's nice to have something that you can spool up again without having your private keys associated with it. Because every time that you go through this process, you're opening up the opportunity for something to go wrong with your laptop with the private keys on it. So for the, you know, the cost of another laptop, you know, I think it's fairly low. I think even buying two, you know, laptops off eBay or something to do this, even if you don't send them back and return them after you're done, I mean, you're still within the realm of purchasing like a single hardware wallet. So I think at the end of the day, you may or may not agree that you're having a major security improvement by having the two laptops, but the cost of it is so low relative to the Bitcoin you're trying to secure that I think it's just a slam dunk to do, in my opinion.
Yeah, thanks for putting that in the context for me there. And then last question, if I could, ordering used laptops off eBay, any risk there in like on the hardware side? Could an attacker set something up there?
I guess they could, but remember, you're wiping the laptop with a fresh install of Linux, and they would have to... I think you're not that much difference in your likelihood of, well, I guess it increases a little bit by buying a used laptop online. You're having someone else touch it that could install something bad. But again, it's kind of like a needle in the haystack. They don't really know what you're using the laptop for, to install, you know, specific malware, unless there's guys out there now that are just putting bad hardware or software on everything with the intention of getting Bitcoin. I think you should probably assume that's happening now. So maybe it isn't a good idea to go on eBay and get a used laptop. I don't know, JW, if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of, I don't know what the instructions are right now off the top of my head. I know we kind of went back and forth on that in Slack, and it's kind of a tough call because ultimately, you're still counting on the fact that this is just a cheap laptop, and it's unlikely that somebody's going to actually like put chips on it to screw you, because it would be so expensive for the attacker. But I think, you know, if it's me, I lean more towards just go buy the thing from Best Buy and then return it afterwards, or Walmart, right? Like, I hate those bastards anyway, so it doesn't hurt my feelings at all to buy it, use it, and return it. If you get a used one. But on the other hand, you know, if you get a cheap laptop, I guess if I was an attacker and I was going to take the time to solder chips on to screw people, I would probably go for higher end laptops. Those are going to be purchased by higher end people. So like if you go out in the Slack, I know there was a back and forth on it, but ultimately I think it's fine either way. As long as you follow the instructions and completely erase the laptop when you get it, which of course, you know, it'd be pretty hard not to do that.
Yeah, I think we're in the realm of like really on the far end of the of talking about security, especially when you think about a lot of the general practices people use using a hardware wallet is that they're using specific hardware, which is, I think if you're going to have attackers trying to mess with hardware, I think they're going to, you know, not go after generic hardware at first, because they're going to get a lot bigger bang for their buck if they go, if they attack the supply chains of, you know, Bitcoin specific hardware.
Totally. Don't put an ad on Craigslist that says I'm looking for a cheap laptop to secure my Bitcoin. That would be similar to buying a hardware wallet, because the people that are shipping it know that you're planning to secure your funds with it.
Yeah.
It does tie into your other question though, too. Like, why have one of these laptops offline? The real answer is just like a defense in depth strategy, right? Like, I don't know of any way that somebody could realistically take a freshly installed laptop and steal your Bitcoin off of it. So level two is totally fine.
Well, it's that,
on the other hand, it's the unknowns.
It's the ray gun that measures the vibrations on the computer that someone's sitting outside your window aiming at it, that they'll be able to figure out, which was the criticism I heard of, like, oh, you don't want to use an offline computer for your private keys because someone could do that. And I was sitting there listening going, what?
Yeah.
You know, it would be like me sitting in a meeting, you know, going back to my, you know, reliability engineering stuff and someone saying, well, what happens if an alien spaceship comes down and shoots a missile at this reactor? I said, well, the reactor's going to blow up then. You know, we're done. Yeah, but the likelihood of that scenario is basically zero.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Right on. Hey, I think I'm gonna wrap it up. Actually, if you want to hang out longer, I should be able to boomer my way through figuring out how to make you a moderator. You want to do that or you want to call it a day? That's totally fine, but I got to run.
I can hang on for a few minutes if a couple people want to, you know, talk, shoot the breeze, whatever.
Does anybody know how to make somebody a moderator? Or a host? Because I've seen co-hosts. And it's not where you would expect it to be just by clicking on somebody's name.
There's a little three-dot thing up at the top. I don't know if it has.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I don't have the three dots by the end anymore. I think I used to. I have three dots down below. Wait a minute. Rolo, remove, block. I can block you. I can remove you. I can mute you.
But all probably good ideas.
I can't make you weird. That is the obvious place. If it wasn't going to be in the first spot, you would think it would be down in like search guests, but no.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever actually run a space.
All right. I don't know how to do it. And I think we'll just call it because I already took a ton of your time. That was super helpful, man.
Yeah.
So I'll publish this on the website. I don't know if you want to publish it on your podcast or whatever, but obviously it's all open source. Like, do what you want with it. And then I'll link it from the website with your reviews. So
awesome.
Thanks for doing it.
Yeah, no problem. This is great. Appreciate you asking.
All right. Yeah, right on, man. See you guys.
See you. Bye.